Welcome to Music History Monday for June 25th, 2018. This is Bob Greenberg, and this week's podcast is entitled The Firebird. On June 25th, 1910, 108 years ago today, Igor Stravinsky's The Firebird received its premiere at the Paris Opera House in a ballet performance produced by Serge Diaghilev, staged by the Ballet Russe, and conducted by Gabriel Pernier, with choreography by Michel Fokine, and the Firebird herself danced by the great Tamara Karsavina. The Firebird was a smash, a sensation, a runaway hit from the first. The not-quite 28-year-old Stravinsky was hailed as the successor to the Mogutchaya Kuchka, the Russian Five, the group of 19th-century composers who put Russian nationalist music on the international musical map. Mile Balakirev, Cesar Cui, Modest Mussorgsky, Alexander Borodin, and Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov. Writing in the Nouvelle Revue Française, the critic Henri Gaillon called The Firebird, and I quote, "the most exquisite marvel of equilibrium that we have ever imagined between sounds, movement, and forms. It is a danced symphony," unquote. There's no need to quote additional reviews, because one after the other, they echo the one just quoted. Thanks to the Firebird's triumph, the young Stravinsky instantly became the star composer of Diaghilev's Ballet Russe, in which capacity he would turn out the magnificent Petrushka in 1911 and the seminal The Rite of Spring in 1913. The Firebird is indeed a beautifully crafted, gorgeously orchestrated piece. And if, in truth, much, if not most of it sounds as if it could have been composed by Alexander Borodin or Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov 40 years earlier, there are still enough moments of genuine modernism in it, for example, the infernal dance and the asymmetrical phrases of the finale, that the piece sounds suitably up to date. At that triumphant premiere, 108 years ago today, no one in the audience would have guessed that a scant few years before, Stravinsky was still but a compositional amateur. We hear and read all the time about musical child prodigies, but rarely about adult prodigies. Stravinsky was among the greatest adult musical prodigies of all time, and his story bears telling, if for no other reason to remind us all that we can accomplish great things at any point of our lives, provided we're determined and not hard work averse. Igor Stravinsky was born on June 17th, that's the Gregorian calendar date, June 5th, according to the Russian Julian calendar, 1882, in the town of Oranienbaum, today known as Lomonosov, on the Gulf of Finland, about 35 miles west of St. Petersburg. Stravinsky's family was considered minor nobility. His mother, Anna, came from the land-owning governing class of 19th century Russia, and his father, Fyodor, was one of the great operatic bass baritones of his time, a singer whose career coincided with the golden age of Russian opera. In 1876, Fyodor became a member of the Imperial Theater in St. Petersburg. It was there in St. Petersburg that Stravinsky grew up with his three brothers, two older, one younger, his mother and father, and the servants, as many as five or six, in an eight-room second-story flat in the center of town. The St. Petersburg in which Stravinsky grew up was an amazing mix of Western and Eastern Europe, of rich and poor, of city people and country peasantry. The impressions made on the young Stravinsky were indelible, the exotic confrontation and synthesis of East and West that he witnessed on a daily basis, well, it cut through to his very soul. It was a confrontation and synthesis that would come to lie at the heart of his music. Stravinsky hated school, made few friends, and was a poor student. In his own words, a student, quote, who studied badly and behaved no better, unquote. Precisely when Stravinsky began taking piano lessons is still unclear. It was probably around the age of 10. At about the same time, he began attending the opera and concerts. As far as his music education went, that was about it. By the age of 17, he was a competent pianist, a hobbyist, who announced to his parents his intention of becoming a professional musician. To Fyodor Stravinsky, a professional musician of great renown, Igor's aspirations were, well, laughable. Accordingly, Stravinsky's parents insisted that he go to the university to study law, qualify for the civil service, and then get a job. In 1901, despite his mediocre academic record, Stravinsky was accepted to the University of St. Petersburg as a law student. Among Stravinsky's classmates was Vladimir or Volodya Rimsky-Korsakov, the youngest son of the composer. At Volodya's urging, Stravinsky decided to show his early compositions to Rimsky-Korsakov and to seek his advice, a psychologically dangerous step for anyone as sensitive and musically inexperienced as Stravinsky was at the time. Stravinsky picks up the story. Quote, in 1902, I told him, Rimsky-Korsakov, of my ambition to become a composer and asked his advice. He asked me to play some of my first attempts. Oh, alas! The way he received them was far from what I had hoped. He told me that I must continue my studies in harmony and counterpoint with one or another of his pupils in order to acquire complete mastery of craftsmanship. He finished by adding that I could always go to him for advice, and that he was quite willing to take me in hand when I had acquired the necessary foundation, unquote. Oh, goodness, Rimsky-Korsakov was a nice man, and this is about as humane a blow-off as any I've ever heard. But, bless him, Stravinsky would not be deterred. He followed Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's advice to that proverbial T, and for 3 years, studied music theory and composition with various of Rimsky's former students. In 1905, having attained a degree of technical competence, Rimsky-Korsakov kept his word and accepted Stravinsky as a private student. From here, things moved quickly. Somehow, Stravinsky managed to graduate from the university in 1906. As his father had died back in 1902, there was no longer any barrier to his musical aspirations. After 1906, he was able to concentrate entirely on his lessons with Rimsky-Korsakov, and with them, his extraordinarily rapid development continued. He wrote a series of works, including a symphony, that managed to secure a growing, if local, reputation. Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov died on June 8, 1908. Stravinsky was devastated. But as with the death of his father 6 years before, Rimsky's death had a liberating effect as well. Among the next compositions Stravinsky wrote was a brief orchestral work entitled Scherzo Fantastique, a piece that owes much more to the French school, in particular Paul Dukas and Claude Debussy, than to the Russian school. Serge Diaghilev. On the evening of January 24, 1909, Stravinsky's Scherzo Fantastique was performed in St. Petersburg. Among the audience was the impresario Serge Diaghilev, who was intrigued by what he heard. Diaghilev, 10 years older than Stravinsky, was an impresario whose self-avowed mission was to bring the arts of Russia to the attention of Western Europe in general, and Paris in particular. By 1908, Diaghilev had presented in Paris Russian painting, Russian music, Russian opera, and as he put it later, quote, from opera to ballet was but a step, unquote. In 1908, Diaghilev founded the Ballet Russe, the Russian ballet, as a showcase for Russian dancers and designers. At Diaghilev's request, Stravinsky orchestrated a couple of Chopin piano works for the inaugural 1909 season of the Ballet Russe. But even as the first season approached, Diaghilev and his people were making plans for the second 1910 season of the Ballet Russe. Diaghilev wrote, quote, "I need a ballet, and a Russian one. The first Russian ballet, since there is no such thing. There is Russian opera, Russian symphony, Russian song, Russian dance, Russian rhythm, but no Russian ballet. And that is precisely what I need to perform in May of the coming year in the Paris Grand Opera," unquote. Yes, my friends, for reasons his own, Diaghilev clearly considered Tchaikovsky's ballets to be naught but chopped cabbage. Diaghilev's new real Russian ballet was to be based on the Russian folktale of the Firebird. Diaghilev first offered the commission to the composer Anatol Leonov, who turned it down. He then considered a composer named Fyodor Akimenko, but then decided Akimenko did not have the right stuff. He then approached Nikolai Cherepnin, but Cherepnin wasn't interested. A frustrated Diaghilev fired off a telegram to his Chopin arranger. Was Stravinsky willing to take on a major commission? Hey, did the Tsar poop in the Kremlin? Stravinsky managed to turn out the 45-minute score in under 6 months, lightning quick by his meticulous method of working. Diaghilev told his dancers during the final rehearsal, pointing to Stravinsky, quote, "Mark him well. He is a man on the eve of celebrity," unquote. Diaghilev, as usual, was right. The Firebird was a triumph. For the public as well as the press, it was a fully homogenized Russian ballet product, just the sort of thing that had been hoped for and expected from a company called the Ballet Russe. And for Stravinsky, June 25th, 1910, marked truly the beginning of a long and magnificent compositional career. For lots more information about Stravinsky and the Firebird, I would direct your attention to my Great Courses biography of Stravinsky in the Great Masters series, as well as my survey, The Great Music of the 20th Century, both of which can be downloaded from my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com. Thank you.